Don, I'm just wondering if you could talk a bit about, I was in Chela in 91 for the big kind of 500 years encuentro, and I know that they're ongoing organizing around that. Has, you know, what role has sort of that movement around recognizing not only indigenous identity, but sort of trying to reclaim that part of history had on the kinds of things you've looked at in terms of indigenous movements sort of evolving into political parties?
The organization around the quincentenary in 1992 was absolutely fundamental for the extension of indigenous movements. Prior to that time, you had very localized movements, you had some movements of regions within countries, and to some extent you had some national movements. But I think the 1992 marking of the quincentenary was really an opportunity to do international organization on a great scale. And even within countries, it really increased the profile of indigenous peoples within their own country because of the great deal of media attention. The elite media and governments were ready to do all these festivals celebrating the arrival of Christopher Columbus and this Europeanized vision of America and how great it was. And indigenous peoples had been preparing for years before this and presented a totally different view of not just history, but also of the present and the future of Latin America. So I think that the 1992 was just a touchstone for all of this type of organizing. It was extremely important to create the public awareness and public image of indigenous peoples, and also to create all of these connections among indigenous peoples.
The last time I was in Guatemala, I visited a Mayan publishing house where they're starting to publish books, educational books, in four of the major languages. Do you see more of that, where there's not only books being written by indigenous authors, but even being written in their own languages in your research?
Oh, absolutely. I think there's been a greater flourishing of indigenous writing. Of course, this has to mirror or follow, really, trends in education. And I think that in the 60s and 70s, a lot of effort was made to invest in the education of indigenous peoples. A lot of that was in Spanish, but it created a class of intellectuals who went to high school and went on to college and wanted to write. And then they were able to get support from their governments and from international organizations to publish their own work. I know in the Andes, one of the major presses is Abiala, which publishes a lot of indigenous work, and they do publish in the indigenous languages. So there really has been a revitalization of that, a greater interest in learning indigenous languages, and even indigenous parents who can't write their own language or can't even speak the indigenous language to which they're connected historically, want their kids to learn those languages and want them to be able to read those languages. And I think that that's attributable both to the effort to improve education, but also the effort to really reconnect with identities that are now much more highly valued than they had been in the past.
You mentioned in your presentation that because of the, you know, the relationship that a lot of indigenous movements have with international groups, a lot of NGOs and so forth, that at some level it's created some tensions, maybe a little resentment because of maybe feeling that they're doing too much. I wonder if you could just speak a little bit more about that, if you have any specific examples that you came across in your work.
Resentments between national groups? I'm not sure what you're...
Resentments between the indigenous movements themselves and what the NGO folks were sort of doing with them.
Well, I think one of the problems is that indigenous peoples gained these political rights and entered office in at the local level and even in the national level, and they found that the technical requirements that they had to fulfill for accounting and budgeting and planning and oversight were beyond their educational level. And so NGOs were hired by the government or by international organizations to provide this this assistance. But indigenous peoples want to be able to do it themselves, and one of their biggest complaints is that these NGOs refuse to share their knowledge. They'll come in and do the budget, But they don't want to train indigenous peoples so that they'll be able to do it themselves, because those NGO people want to maintain their jobs. There are, you know, sectors of society in Latin America who live off of development money. They're professionals, and they do this type of technical assistance. If the indigenous population were to become completely educated and capable of undertaking these activities, there would be no more need for this class of professionals, some of whom are indigenous. Who are advisors and consultants who do this type of work. So I think that creates quite a lot of resentment. And in some cases, those NGOs do have political tendencies. A lot of NGOs in Latin America are associated with political parties, or the members, you know, have a particular political inclination, and they tend to favor particular indigenous organizations that they want to support for their own interests.
You mentioned just briefly, you know, that some indigenous movements have kind of, who maybe had a, historically were connected to union groups or maybe even churches, have maybe sort of left that. I'm just wondering, again, my own experience in Guatemala, that the particular role of the evangelical church has been pretty significant. And if you've seen, just in terms of kind of U.S.-based kind of religious connection, have that, if there's any kind of ongoing influence, particularly from the evangelical side, to sort of the development of indigenous movements?
Evangelical churches in the countries that I've studied, mainly in South America, I haven't studied in Guatemala, tend to get a very bad rap from the more militant indigenous groups, those that reject the status quo more than others. Because a lot of these groups have been trying to proselytize, they're trying to exploit indigenous peoples, and they tend to have conservative political agendas. But the research that I have done on the ground shows that a lot of these churches may in the past have been very much directed from either Europe or from the United States, but to a great extent they've been captured by local evangelicals. So, for example, in Highland, Ecuador, it's a very, very strong evangelical indigenous movement. They have their own political party, and they control many governments, and you don't really see the control of foreigners or U.S. missionaries. In the 70s and 80s, those groups were very much trying to discourage indigenous peoples from becoming active, and eventually they just said, hey, you know, we want to be powerful. We want to get out there like the Catholic organizations. We want to be in government. You know, we're not going to be obedient. And so they broke away to some extent from evangelicals from abroad.
Maybe just one last question then. In terms of what we've seen in the last, you know, 5 years with, particularly in South America, with, you know, groups challenging kind of neoliberal policies, sort of the Bolivarian revolution, as Chavez likes to call it, you know, what role do you see? I mean, what's sort of the short-term and long-term role that, again, indigenous movements will play in whether or not that sort of regional revolution will, you know, evolve to what at least some of the leaders of the movement would like it to evolve to?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure where you're going with that. Are you asking me the impact of Evo Morales? I'm sorry.
Well, Morales to some degree, but I'm just wondering in the other countries too, in Brazil and in Ecuador, in Chile, to what role in, you know, indigenous movements will play in determining kind of you know, greater independence from the U.S. In terms of, you know, regional politics. That's obviously being influenced a lot by Chavez, but not exclusively. So,
well, yes, I think that indigenous peoples are really one of the most articulate voices of rejecting domination from outside of Latin America, both the United States influence, but also European influence. And I think that they are able to make this connection in the minds of citizens between a culture that's being dominated, not just an economy that's being dominated, but a culture and a people. So I think they're very effective advocates for independence from the United States and from international organizations and financial institutions that try to dominate them. I don't know if they have that much power to do much about it, just because of the great dependence of Latin American countries on trade and development assistance and investment from abroad. Perhaps we're moving more into an era where trade and investment are much more important, but I don't think any leader wants to discourage trade and investment, certainly not Evo Morales in Bolivia or Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. So to some extent, this may just be part of the political posture of leaders in the hemisphere. But I think that the connections between Latin American economies and foreign economies are just too great to completely reject that.
Thank you.
This has been a Media Mouse production. For more audio and independent reporting covering Grand Rapids, Michigan, and beyond, visit MediaMouse.org.